At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
And welcome, everybody. It's the Rugby Rant. I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara. That's Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt, episode 193. And with us today is our buddy Dave Fiasco. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Good, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
John Cullen must be busy playing some military rugby or something.
Yes, he is.
Listen, it's
he's captain, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's like he was the captain. That's why I told him, make sure he stretches a lot. Like, what's the last time, you know, he was really competitive. I love busting his balls about that. So,
well, bro, he told me before we did 2 weeks ago, he's like, yeah, I have actually been training for 4 months. It wasn't like what happened when the Hounds gave me a call.
I was going to say, if you know, me and Rob knowing Cully the way we do, and when the Hounds did call him, he was definitely like, it's that meme of Thor where he's like fat with the belly and he's like eating the chicken wings or whatever. That's how I felt Cully was going into Chicago. And don't get me wrong, he rounded out by the end of the season as any professional does. But, you know, sometimes you're not ready for that call and that's okay. That's what it's about.
That Kiwi 9, you know, a few years ago was fishing on a boat somewhere, right?
Yeah. Dude, I still have collegiate D1 eligibility if anybody's looking for a 37-year-old prop who hasn't played in about 10 years.
Oh, good Lord. So you're saying you want to play 9? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, of course. What are you talking about? I mean, you've seen me kick. Come on. Listen, I'm 1-for-1 in conversion attempts in my career, 100%, baby.
Well, stay off the pitch, and that way you keep it at 100%.
That's what I'm saying. It's all about the optics. Stay off the pitch. I can't fuck up. That works. I'm also 100% eating KFC buckets, too. So, you know, keeping that streak alive. But anyway, folks, this is episode 193. Again, as we say all the time, this much closer to 200. But before we talk about that, I just want to say we are looking for more rugby content creators. If this is something you want to do, if you have a show idea, if you have an idea for an interview style, hit us up. Go on Facebook. Hit us up on Facebook Messenger, rugbyrantpod @gmail.com. Hit me or Hammer up individually. We're looking to kind of branch out and have some more shows on our network. And if you have an idea, come talk to us, flesh it out. We'll see if we can make it happen. And we're always looking for bloggers for therugbyrant.com.
And just so folks know what's coming up in the near future, the Rugby Rant is committed to trying to get all 11 head coaches on the show. Won't be full-length hours, but, you know, 30 minutes or so. We're just going to preview the upcoming season, who they like in their – not who they like in their squad, but, you know, who's been the additions they're looking forward to in their squads, you know, what their style of play was going to be, leadership, all those kinds of questions are going to be things I'm going to ask them about. We just got a recording with head coach from San Diego Legion, John Minetti, last night. It'll be coming out, one of the first ones. I appreciate it. He's a good bloke, and we had a lot of fun doing it. But nevertheless, look for that series to come out. It's going to be a lot of fun as we preview MLR 2025.
It's always fun when we do a preview because everything we talk about preseason never comes through by the time we hit the next offseason. I mean, there's a reason I am in the bottom of the barrel in Super Brew most season. But let's get into a wrap the pitch. Hammer, my guy.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Midwest Championships put on by Ryan Ginty at Next Level Rugby. You can go back and check it out on his YouTube page, also on Midwest Rugby's YouTube page as well. Nevertheless, congratulations to the Chicago Griffins. What an exciting match. I was on the call on that one. Nail biter all the way to the end. Premier Women, Metropolis, D2 Men, Blaze, congratulations to my boys at the Chicago Blaze. D2 Women, Grand Rapids, had a nice one against Rochester. The D3 Men's, South Pittsburgh Hooligans over Red River, very close one in that match, 20-17. And then the D4 Men, Indianapolis over Lincoln Park, 31-24. Congratulations to all teams who will be playing in the fall. Should be exciting at the club rugby level with the Midwest being represented.
Yeah, shout out to Ryan Ginty, Next Level Rugby. We love all the production him and his team do and putting these guys into a realm where we can actually watch instead of having to, like, you know, back in the day, Rob would have to use like a telegraph, like beep, 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 trying to figure out the score lines and shit, you know, that and what happened at the Battle of Gettysburg, you know, things of that nature. But no, seriously, thanks to Ryan and Next Level because we actually get to watch these matches now and take part in what's going on in different parts of the country. Dave, you're around the pitch.
Yeah, you know, I just want to echo what you just said there. You know, this is kind of a downtime for me, and it's nice to be a rugby fan. And, you know, I don't have to go out to the game in some of the bad weather. You know, as you guys know, I went out to a game, had my car stolen. So the ability to sit on the couch and watch the game is fantastic. So, you know, I get to watch a lot of rugby. So that's great, and I appreciate everything that Ryan Ginty and you guys are doing. You know, lately, you know, I'm getting back into the sevens. We've got the boys and girls heading down to New Zealand for the Global Schools Tournament in the middle of December time. I just completed on the boys' side our camp, so we brought in 24 boys from the U18 level and selected the top 13 that'll go down and represent us down in Auckland, New Zealand, from December 6th to December 16th. So looking forward to seeing our boys represent. You know, we finished sixth in the tournament last year, which is a huge honor for them. A lot of those guys, you know, I think will represent on the global stage down the road. You know, guys like Noah Brown, you know, Lucas LeCamp, those are guys and names that you know that have featured at this tournament. So we're looking for the same type of experience, you know, for our U18s on both the men and women's side.
So Fiasco, awesome. I gotta ask you, is Mrs. Fiasco sending a gift basket to Ryan Ginty, thanking him for not only keeping you at home, but also keeping your car safe?
Yeah, yes, and yes.
Listen, it's
in the mail, Ryan.
One of the funniest texts I ever got was Hammer going, yeah, so Fee had some fun this weekend and told me the whole story, to which I nearly texted Fee, like, what the hell's going on? Yeah. And then I got the backstory a couple of days later of, like, you know, finding the vehicle and such.
Go to a Lions Bombers game, and you know, that's the outcome.
And the best part is, I'm like, well, Hammer, you didn't, like, offer to drive him home? He goes, I had no idea it happened.
True.
Oh God! Listen, I've worked in some seedy parts of the Bronx where your car isn't there when you come back for it, so I know what it feels like.
It took him 47 years to get me in Chicago, so I don't feel too bad.
Listen, Chirac, baby, Chirac. All right, it's my turn now. After throwing shade on the Windy City, the Miami Sharks this week or the beginning of last week, I think. Named their new chief executive officer, Milagros Cubelli. She was the CMO last year in their inaugural year as a team, and she, you know, has a ton of experience, the upper levels of a lot of businesses, but, you know, including rugby, you know, sponsorship executive for Global Citizen, marketing director for Play Patagonia, which put on a lot of South American and Central American rugby tournaments and soccer and a whole bunch of other sports down there. So she's used to the big time. I see this as a easy transition of leadership to a team that while they struggled last year on the pitch, it seemed as though their game day effort and their administration was good. But again, we see a lot of first team, you know, struggles that first year. But this transition seems a little more natural than maybe some of the transitions we've seen recently. So good luck to Milagros. And, you know, we're going to see what she could do with Miami this upcoming year with the Sharks, baby. You know, I mean, we talk about transition all the time, right, Hammer? And
yeah,
some of it seems to be super forced. Some of it, like this, seems to be more natural. And we always feel like the outcome of these more natural transitions show up on the pitch in a more positive way.
I think the telltale sign in the MLR that a transition of this sort has a positive effect, you immediately see it. Now the Sharks do a pretty nice job at the social media. They mm-hmm. have been all last season. But even like the NOLA Gold, we're seeing a transition in leadership there, transition a little bit of a small part of the ownership. And we've seen that them really step up their social media piece, just not only with player announcements, player thank yous, but also some of the social side that they do in and around New Orleans. It's been pretty fabulous. So it's good to see, and hopefully those best practices continue throughout the MLR.
Absolutely. And, you know, NOLA Gold, and now with the announcement that Houston is kind of doing a little bit of rebrand, are they the Houston Gold? Because I mean, they're that right. That mustard color, whatever the frig they have, they're like gold. They're gold and black now. I'm like, huh, it's weird.
But I'm hearing it's NOLA Gold West is actually what I'm hearing. They're changing it to.
This will be a topic for a few weeks. Why can't people pick original fucking colors in this league? I've been saying it, Rob, have I not been saying it for 5 years? Every time a new team comes in, it's like the same fucking colors. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, red, white, and blue for two teams is okay. But like red and black, Utah and Atlanta, what the fuck? You know, like there's other colors besides that. And the Sabercats had a nice yellow. They had a nice fucking yellow. I don't know why you need to change it and darken it, but whatever. Our actual topic is going to be USA's first match, a thrilling victory over Portugal in Europe. And we're going to talk about that in detail after a word from our sponsors. So like we said, we're going to talk about the Eagles' win over Portugal. That was 21-17 Saturday, November 9th. The weather seemed to be really good. It was like 65. The wind was about, I think, you know, 7 to 10, so nothing too crazy, which, you know, is kind of on par for where they're playing, you know, in Europe around this time of year. It's funny because our buddy Dan Falcon, we were talking with it. I don't know why we were talking about weather. Oh, because I came out with an article today about weather and rugby. And he's like, you know, talking about Louisiana. I said, well, there's a reason, Dan, I will only come and visit you in fucking December and never during the MLR season. And that's particularly because I already sweat enough. I don't need to sweat in Louisiana in February. But, you know, it's something we do like to talk about is pitch condition. The pitch condition seemed very, very good. In this match.
Did you notice that the official actually moved the scrum several times because of the looseness of the turf? So while the weather was nice, maybe they got quite a bit of rain prior to, which made the...
But I also feel like sometimes it's not necessarily the pitch could have been good. It's just guys are wearing deeper studs now. You know, it depends sometimes, I feel like, on how the players are playing versus, like, the pitch condition was shady. You know, like, if you look at the Eagles, when they played Scotland, it had rained for like seven straight days in DC. I mean, it was like spongy isn't even the word. I don't know how else you could say more spongy, but it was like literally in DC. It didn't seem like that in this match, but you're right. They did have to move the scrum because it was getting chewed up. You know, it's rugby though, right? This is why we play.
Yeah, I know a lot about those scrums.
Yes. By the way, Dave,
you giving orders from the wing?
Yeah.
Hey, sir, you might want to move that over about 5 meters.
I think proven nobody knows what's going on up there. So.
Yes. And, you know, Dave was throwing it in my face, the fact that I've only scored a handful of tries in, you know, my career as a rugby player, and David scored about what 14 in one tournament as a Sevens Eagle. So you can kiss my ass. totally throwing shade at the fat man. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Right.
But let's get to the Eagles match. For all the mistakes, and we made a lot of mistakes, and we kind of talked about this at the beginning before we started recording. I never felt, even when it started, you were right, around the 65th, 68th minute, it's usually when we start to lose the plot. And when we start to lose the plot around there, it seems as though you could feel this energy get sucked out of the pitch, and then all of a sudden we kind of slip down the slope that we don't like. I never got that sense. I never got the sense that we weren't handling the game the way we should, even though, like, Greg Peterson had, like, four knock-ons himself. Again, not trying to throw shade at particular guys, but, like, that's a lot for him. You know, he's a veteran player. I do feel locks have more handling errors than most people because they're, like, big giraffes, and I think sometimes they just don't know how to work their limbs. Yes, I'm throwing shade at Rob at that one. No, but seriously, you know, locks, props, sometimes they're getting the ball quick, then they're getting contact quick. But this seemed just to be, like, you can kind of tell that maybe their camp was a little short, Rob.
Well, yeah, to be honest with you, here's what I saw. I saw a team that was much more evolved for the summer internationals, and that's what I was looking to see. I think we've seen over the course of the last, since July, we've seen a development of this team, and it's been slow. It's been gradual. Is it perfect? No, but it's coming along the way I would hope to see it coming along. Again, I'm viewing this as a long-term affair, right? We expect Scott to be really slowly developing this team, developing the squad, developing how he wants them to play rugby over the course of the next 3 years as we go into Australia in 2027, hopefully qualify for that tournament. The only thing I would say about that 61st minute try by Portugal to put them up, because this was a back and forth pair, I was a little disappointed. I mean, Mooneyham has been a real star for the United States throughout. He's been a consistent player. He really got wrong footed in that for that try. And hopefully that was just a glitch in his gameplay. But I would have hoped that he would have been able to make that tackle, at least slow the Portuguese attack down a little bit.
But I do have to say, I think it was on Nate Osberger's try, if I'm remembering the sequence of events correctly. I think Mooneyham got the ball twice to really draw on that defender, and that's kind of what got Nate almost a free pass to get in and score his try. So, you know, sometimes even though you might be making that mistake on the defensive line, you might be making up for it, you know, on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think you guys, you know, hit on a couple things. You know, Rob, I agree with you. I think it's a long-term process, and international test matches are not easy to win. You know, and I think
we call them tests.
These are games that, you know, we need to win. You know, I don't want to make a lot of comparisons to guys I played with or my time, but I saw a lot of comparisons. You know, we had big physicality in locks. You know, where I had Luke Gross, we saw Greg Peterson. You know, where I had Dan Lyle, Dave Hodges, I saw Patty Ryan, have some big moments. You know, Corey Daniel, these are big physical guys. Yeah. And then, you know, there were young guys that are being brought in that will be here over the long term. And you mentioned, you know, the Osberger try, but it was, you know, the hooker Klein who pulled it out the back to AJ, and then it was off to BSAG, and BSAG threw a miss pass out to Osberger. So again, you know, a young guy in BSAG, I think 11 of our 15 had less than 15 caps. And again, an international test match that I think is very, very difficult to win. And again, we're not talking about, you know, 2024. We're looking at 2027. And these are little steps that guys like Mooneyham have to have. You know, we have to learn how to win. And again, I think there was a lot of young players in there. Again, 11 of our guys, you know, that had less than 15 caps. MLR outside of AJ and Ruben. And these guys are now getting these meaningful match minutes. If you're following Scott Lawrence on LinkedIn, you know, he's talking about it. And, you know, this is now, I think, our seventh test this year. So with two more to go, right? So we're 2-5. And while we may want to see, you know, more W's, we got one here in November. We have an opportunity against Tonga. We have another one against Spain. And again, I think we're starting to see some of those building blocks. We're starting to see some of these young guys get integrated, because they will be there, you know, in the long term. And, you know, guys like Lopetti, I think, had a great game and a lot of positive, you know, where, again, I think historically we're talking about how this one got away. you know, was it perfect? By no means, you know. And I also thought we had opportunities 10 minutes into the second half to really put it away with a foot on the throat, and we just quite didn't get there. So, you know, we'll get better, and I'm excited for that.
By the way, on top of that, I think you all make fair points, Dave. I think on top of that, we have to remember what happened the last time these two teams met, just a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. Right? Wasn't it 42-27? I mean, the United States looked to be outclassed. And they certainly were not outclassed in this game. They were in it every bit. This was a game that we thought, boy, if they could win, it'd really be happy days, at least, you know, for the week.
Yeah, if you look at that Patty Ryan try, I mean, he broke through that tackle, and, you know, it seemed as though, and again, maybe this is just my perception of things, sometimes I feel like when we make that first contact, it has slowed us down so much that it gets their defense into a position for that second tackler to really come in and put us down. Patty Ryan blew through that first tackler and just was in fucking sixth gear by the fifth step. It was a great try to see, and that's kind of part of the openness that I think we've been missing, especially from some of our flankers when they're in that position. The other thing, we had talked about a couple episodes ago, maybe even more than a couple episodes, a few months ago, about, you know, what does the, you know, the international tests, what did those losses mean in July, right? And I think it did mean something, because if you look at who didn't play for the U.S. team in this game against Portugal, you know, Ethan McVeigh, a young number nine, obviously he needs minutes, but obviously it was important for the Eagles to win the match. And the match being so tight, keeping Ruben in there, who's been under the pressure, who's done this before, I think that shows you that Scott Lawrence is having that balance between, okay, at this point he knows this is a test match that's going to get us some points that might jump us a few places if we really knock it out of the park in the world rankings, and show the fans, hey, it really is about winning at certain points, and some points it's not, right? So I think, you know, Ethan McVeigh not getting any minutes at all and Ruben de Haas playing the full 80 shows you that, you know, Scott's picking and choosing his spots where he knows the wins are critical and what it does to the fan base to get that win. Because everybody was excited, guys. Everybody was excited after that win. Again, even though it was sloppy, there was a feeling like we never really had it lost. And that's something we haven't had in a while.
And, you know, what's interesting when you talk about the lineups and you talk about some of the – and I spoke to this when I wrote those series of articles about Scott's mission, about Moonshot 2031, that there would be a transition. And we're seeing that play out, where we're starting to see some of those older players who are rather long in the tooth being phased out. We're seeing other players that perhaps are a little older but don't have as many caps on their back end that are – providing that veteran experience, because they played a lot of varieties of rugby, not just necessarily test caps. And then we're seeing some of those guys that, like Ruben de Haas, I don't know if people realize, 26 years old, and I think he has north of 35 caps, test caps. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty impressive when you think about it. There's a guy who could be in the United States setup through 2027. He could eclipse Clever if you think about it.
Well, and again, I think it's important for these guys, you know, not only to get minutes, but to learn how to win. And I think, you know, that's where you're seeing the balance of leadership. And again, guys like Greg Peterson and AJ McGinty, who might be north of 30 years old, who, you know, may see 2027. But again, they're going to provide that stability. They're going to provide that leadership. And they're going to show these guys how to win, which I think is important. And these are games we should win, right? I mean, we're Americans, and we shouldn't be, you know, thinking about losing to the Chileans and the Portuguese and the Canadians. I mean, these are games that, if we really want to get to where we're going, these are games that we need to be consistently winning. And again, it's a habit to learn how to win. And I think that's some of the happy balance. And Rob, you mentioned it. I mean, Ruben's, you know, 26 years old, you know, he's here 4 years from now. So again, I see that happy balance of what Scott's trying to do.
And by the way, how about the way this team hung on and won? Not only scoring the try to go ahead, but then the way they defended in the last 3 minutes of this match.
I was just about to – that was going to be my next point, is their defense seemed to be way better this match. And, you know, the only thing I would critique on their defense is after we came back from halftime, I think Portugal scored their next try. I'm trying to look. 62. They scored at the 62-minute mark, mm-hmm. and they really scored because when they were copping out the defense, the Eagles, they were one short. And generally, in the past few matches we've had, it's been a lot of missed. It wasn't just one guy, right? It was a bunch of guys were open. So to say, okay, we closed the gap, we played 20 minutes of good rugby, and then they scored on us because there was one gap is a big improvement from what we've been seeing the past, I'd say, 8 months.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, it wasn't perfect. In another area that I think, you know, by far wasn't perfect, I think Klein had an off day in our lineout. I mean, I think we missed a lot of lineouts.
Yes.
You know, but again, I thought he had a great play where he was able to pull it out the back. It was dynamic rugby. You know, I think where AJ was able to, you know, give it to Patty Ryan, you know, which was, you know, a couple defenders out where he did find himself on a back. And again, you know, us little guys love watching our big guys just, you know, go through the line. And again, it's something that, you know, guys will build off of, right? And I think that's an important piece.
And you talk about dynamic rugby, Dave. This is what this style of this game, this is what I was hoping to see, you know, in those August PNC, September PNC matches, right? Where we had in those matches, it seemed to be a little too direct. But now we've got a bit more of dynamic rugby going on where guys are pulling out the back. And it's not just a certain player or one or two players that are trusted to do so, but it's across, you know, across the board. Now, I will have to say AJ played out of his skin, and it wasn't in a lot of the ways that we're accustomed to see him doing that. It was much more in the, you know, in contact areas that we saw him play very well. My concern moving forward is, do we have an answer for AJ when, you know, when he hangs him up? You know, do we have somebody that can play us into a match like I think he played us into this match?
Yeah. I mean, I can think of one. You know, Rand Santos is at Cal right now, so I know he was unavailable for this tour, but he was a guy that fared well, you know, for the 20s. And again, could be a guy, you know, for future for down the road.
I mean, you had Luke Carty, who they didn't play, but again, I don't think he needed to with the way McGinty was playing. And Luke has a decent amount of minutes, so it's not like, you know, you really need to, like, get him in that space. But like Klein, right? Klein and Pifoletti, that was a good example of, we have Tonga next week, right? Most likely, Tonga's going to have a really fierce front row. You want Pifoletti starting that. Did he really need to start against Portugal? Not really, to get Klein some minutes to maybe, you know, work on his throwing technique in an actual scenario. Because let's be honest, you can watch these hookers do all this fucking TikTok crazy shit where they're hitting, you know, a garbage truck and whatever. But until you do it in a match and you're playing against a real defense that's going to come after you, you know, sometimes you get that hitch and you're giddy up. So I think in that particular selection, I really like the fact that Klein was in there getting minutes. And then Pifoletti coming in and scoring is nice. And you know that he's going to be fired up going into the Tonga game. But I think that's where you have the trade-off, right? We talk about Ethan McVeigh not playing. Well, Klein starting and getting quality minutes. I think he got about 62 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was great, especially going into Tonga, which we know is going to be a tough, tough match. The other thing I noticed, I don't know if you guys noticed, Eric Stordy coming in as a reserve. Does he have like a cousin on Portugal? Because there was a Rafael Stordy starting, I believe, at 14 at their wing, which would be hysterical if he has like a cousin there we didn't know about and they're playing each other against rugby, in rugby. But, you know, that's just interesting. When I was watching the match, I noticed that. I ended up writing that down. I was like, dude, Rafael Stordy, number 14. I wonder if him and Eric are like cousins or something.
We had his younger brother, who's also a St. Mary's, Mario Stordy, you know, as well with our 23s. So don't know if there's any relation, but it was great to see him get his first cap.
You know, it was great.
As noted, you know, Scott was able to cap three new players, mm-hmm. Which again, I think is all part of that building block, gradually bringing in more guys. You know, I'm excited to see Noah Brown eventually get an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I know he's with the program right now. You know, I don't know that Nate had his best game, you know, so maybe Noah comes in one of these next ones and we get to see another young player in addition to McVeigh or someone else. So I think it's just all part of the process, getting these guys, you know, these meaningful match minutes. And again, 8-9 tests now this year, in addition to some of their MLR games. And again, you know, some of the guys who featured for the 20s as well, too. So they're getting those minutes.
So I got to ask you, Dave, you know, your expertise and having some familiarity with some of these players we're talking about, you know, in that next match against Tonga, do you bring in a Noah Brown, or do you maybe wait to put him up against the Spaniards in that third test to really give him an opportunity to shine, especially given not that he's not a physical player. I just think that that Tonga match, you know, there's going to be reliance upon some veteran experience, right? And then what about Storti? Can he play that 15 role? Because I think that's an area that, you know, going down the road a few years, we enter into 2027, that's an area that we need to have somebody back there that we can count on that's consistently making the 15.
You know, I thought Mitch Wilson, you know, played well, you know, and I think of Mitch as an older term veteran, but he's only got 12 caps. You know, Mitch right. is one of those guys who's got under 15 caps. You know, I think he's approaching 30 years of age, yeah. you know, maybe. You know, so again, you know, I think of him as an old guy, but he's really not. You know, could Storti develop into it? Time will tell. You know, and again, I think it's just about getting minutes. I think about that deep three overall. You know, you have Osberger back there. You have Mooneyham. You have Noah Brown. You know, I think it's going to be about, you know, rest and rotation. You know, and again, I think Nate provides the most experience. But again, you know, in this game, we moved the ball edge to edge. And again, it was some dynamic rugby. I thought Mooneyham had some good moments. You know, Noah's a little bit taller, a little bit, you know, more physical, you know, so does it add more for an aerial game? I think it's going to be about just gradually bringing these guys in and then, you know, seeing who can, you know, get the most and seeing what Scott can get the most out of them.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking at, let me see his stats. Yeah, that's not even. I'm going to ask this probably every time we talk about the Eagles until the question gets answered. Who's coming in at lock?
You mean because,
like a true lock
in the future?
In the future, because I got to be honest, I'm looking at a list of guys who've been capped, and I think Brendan Daly might have been the last capped to lock in 2018, and he was only 6'4".
Didn't we have one in the Romania match?
Van Erwin.
But he's another guy who wasn't. Yeah, I think he's in that 6'4" range. Yeah. You know,
I think he's more of a 6'6", but he certainly doesn't have the height that Peterson has. And then there's another, and I apologize, I don't have these notes in front of me, but there's another. Player that's gotten some international, not international cap experience, but international playing abroad experience that could be brought in too. But I'd have to look up and see who's that name that was. And I just didn't know if they weren't available due to injury or not available due to, you know, it was early in the test window and therefore wasn't released to play by their club.
I mean, if you're just looking by height, and I'm going by a list that's on Wikipedia, so you know that's definitely reliable. CC Mahoney at 6'8" was the last true capped lock in proper lock size, in my opinion, February 18th, 2017. And we're talking, it's 2024 going into 2025. And I don't know who's there. You know, and it's that is particularly concerning because you could teach a guy like Eric Storti to kick a ball and play fullback. You could teach a guy to play nine. You could teach a guy to play. You can't teach height. And if we continue on the path where we're only going to have 6'4 guys, 6'3 guys sometimes come in at lock, we're going to be at a really big disadvantage against those tier one teams, in my opinion, in a pack. And I think we're starting to see that now as some of the guys that are paired with Peterson aren't his height either, you know? And that's no shot at Jason Dam. Jason Dam's not a small guy, but
when he's not a lock. He's not a true lock.
You know?
He's a
thrower. When you have a Peterson, Savetta, Brakely, Mahoney, you know, 6'8", 6'8", 6'9", 6'8", you know, yeah. And now those guys are aging out. It's just that's more concerning to me than like your question, Rob, about, you know, Mitch Wilson, right?
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, Bryce Muller and Miles Malone, I think, were the 20s that they had at the Junior World Trophy. Not sure, you mm-hmm. know, where they fit on that height, you know, radar. You know, obviously, though, you know, they fared well, you know, at the 20s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. You can't teach height and that. You know, that's our job in the pathway program to go find them.
That's what I'm saying. So go look at those friggin' D3 basketball dropouts, Dave. Let's go. Let's go around the school.
And you know, Scott, you mentioned something there, though, you know, about some of the skill set. You know, and I had a conversation with a colleague of mine. I'm not going to mention who it is, but you know, we were talking about guys like David Still and some of these guys. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Scott, you would probably agree with me. You know, when we're talking about catching and passing – These guys have done this their entire lives.
Yeah.
It may not have been in a rugby catcher pass, but they've been doing this their entire life, and I would argue that they may do it better than some of our rugby players, right? And so, you know, I think there are obviously rugby skills that we got to get guys, you know, trained up on, but, you know, I think a lot of guys can come in and make impact right away. You know, again, Corey Daniel, big physical guy, wrestler, football player. I mean, coming in, and again, I think it's not brain surgery, you know, to go tackle and be physical. And I think, you know, some of those guys are able to do that. But yeah.
Absolutely. No, and I think those basketball guys, you know, it's funny because they say, you know, when you're playing youth football and stuff, like those basketball players, there's a drill we used to run called Nutcrackers, and you can't do it anymore. It's like outlawed in New York. But we used to say that drill made more basketball players than it made football players, because a lot of guys found out in that drill they didn't like contact, right? But at this point now, you got guys who are, you know, playing, you know, at upper levels of basketball. And like you said, what's their skill set? A lot of these guys, they're doing no-look passes and no-look catches, right? So they're comfortable getting the ball in their hands and not necessarily looking at it, looking it in, but keeping their head up. You know, obviously athleticism, they can jump. What are locks going to be? Most of them are going to be jumpers. So you got guys who can definitely catch the ball. They can definitely pass the ball. You just got to teach them a different motion, but it's kind of naturally ingrained in them in what they've been doing for basketball. And if they could play with some of this contact, which a lot of them I think can, especially the really tall guys, you know, some of them play tight end, linebacker in high school and then kind of just transitioned to college basketball because that was their path. You know, I think we can cherry pick some of those guys. And that was what I was always hoping for from the Raptors organization, is to see those LeBron James type guys, those 6'8 guys that are big, broad shoulders that did play high school football. You know, LeBron James always said, if I didn't play basketball, I would try to go to Ohio State to play football. You know, those are the types of guys, you know, maybe we can wrangle into playing rugby. And again, the skill set, especially for a lock in the scrum, isn't that technical, right? You run plays in basketball, so understanding a play at a lineout shouldn't be that far of a stretch. So there's ways we can get guys in there that I think we just need to find them. You're right.
The Glendale Raptors had one. He was a sevens player as well. I think he played it in New York. I just can't think of his name.
He was a basketball player. Yeah, I remember that, but I can't remember his name. So, Dave, have you ever heard of Nafi Maufu?
Yeah.
Okay, so a 6'7", 26-year-old, plays for Barits. You know, is in the player pool. Is he a guy that we could potentially see come through? Does he have the skill set that international test rugby requires?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine if he's playing over there at that level and if he's on that radar, you know, it's probably a matter of time. To see it. You know, I'm not in Scott's camp, you know, so I'm not sure who's on the big board or who they have tabbed or, you know, who's able. You know, obviously, you know, one of the best ability is availability. Right. And so, you know, if they're committed with other commitments, if they have other issues going on, you know, it may just be a matter of time.
Well, also, because we have veterans, you can make a phone call.
Yeah. But also because our veterans are our locks. When you look at the guys who are veterans, I can see why bringing in a new guy right now isn't necessarily the best if you're trying to put some pieces in together like an Ethan McVay or an Eric Storty in those other positions. Because, again, like the technical piece of it, most locks will get, especially if they're playing at the level in France that he's playing at. So is it worth kind of pushing out the old guard when that's really who you need to teach some of these players the professionalism, the travel portion, right? So, you know, there's that balance we're talking about, and I think we're finally seeing the fruits of that balance. Let's preview the Tonga match a little bit. Yeah. You know, I think this is going to be a tough one for us. As much as we like to say we're a physical team, just those poly teams are just built like brick shit houses, and you know they're thick fucking thighed and they run fast, and you know I think that throws us for a loop sometimes.
Yeah, I mean I think if you look at the Fiji and Samoa match, again, not that it'll replicate that. You know, I think that was an 18-13 loss to Samoa, so we were in that one.
We were in it.
You know, the Fiji game was a little bit. Mm-hmm. Got away from us. You know, we didn't have much on the attacking side in that one. But I think we can. And again, you know, for me, I think this can be a winnable game, right? And if they can front up, and if I am Connor Mooneyham, if I am, you know, Ruben DeHaas, I'm looking to Greg Peterson. I'm looking to Patty Ryan. I'm looking to, you know, Corey Daniel, these guys that need to front up, need to be physical, need to play the way I think that they did in the Portugal match. And if they can do that, you know, I think we're starting to see again some dynamic athletic rugby, side to side rugby. Again, AJ had one of his better games. I think Lapetti played well. Dominic, another young guy. I think this is a game that we can look to get a W out of.
B side played very well, I thought, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think he had one late penalty that I was like, let's not let him off the hook here. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I think he had a couple of good missed passes, good reads, which again is showing that he has the right vision for the game.
I think the key against Tonga is similar to what I thought the key was against Fiji and events and against Samoa and the PNC. And is that just, you know, organize yourselves defensively to prevent them from getting that, you know, that offensive juggernaut going where they're getting a lot of offloads and they're chewing up meters at big bits, right? And I think the defensive structure has been so that they're really attacking the middle of that line, that offensive line or their opposition, and they're preventing that ball from getting out wide, and therefore they're clogging up that middle of the field and making teams really try to find gaps in other ways. And I think that plays to the U.S.'s strong suit when they're playing against a team like Tonga or when they're playing against a team like Samoa or Fiji.
Well, Rob and Scott, you know, I didn't mean to interrupt, but, you know, I think, again, it starts with one-off tackles. And when you have flankers and locks and again, physical guys who can do that, it provides a lot of guys to be on their feet, right? Yeah. And when they can do that, they can get good line speed, prevent the ball from getting out wide, slow it up, you know, play slower rugby, which – again, I think Scott Lawrence's defenses are known for and can keep us in the game. And I think if you can do that, that is, you know, that is that shining light. That is that positivity that I think we've all been looking for. And if we can continue to improve, you know, that's, again, what we're all kind of hoping and looking for.
For sure. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that I think the defensive effort against Samoa showed that we can bring it together to do our best to stop the physicality of the team. And we had a lot of tackles that were just one and dones. And I think it's one of those things where if you focus on the tackle and not necessarily on the, you know, concede the breakdown, in my opinion, that's what you need to do for these teams, because trying to commit all those guys to the breakdowns is just going to open you up to have one of those flowing, great pass, great scoring tries that they're going to show on social media all the time. That's not what we want. And I think we just have to have that in our mindset. And I just want to make sure that that's part of what we're doing at the beginning of the match, because if it's something that we're going to be talking about as an adjustment, we don't do well with adjustments for some reason. I don't know what's up with that, but that's just something I've noticed. And so we have to make sure that's part of the game early on.
Add it into the fact that if you're just conceding that breakdown area, making sure you make your tackles and you're spreading your defense out, yeah, they might break the gain line a few times, but you won't be committing those egregious penalties if you're doing this, you know, in between the 40s, right? And therefore conceding kicks into the corner and allowing a big poly team to put that ball into the middle of that line out and maul their way into the try zone. So I think that's another key to this next game.
Well, and I think that is an area for me that's probably, you know, somewhat of a concern is the set piece. You know, again, I think, you know, there were scrums that we got dinged and we got penalized on. There were lineouts that, you know, we missed. We had a lot of opportunities. You know, I thought put Portugal, you know, really away, and we didn't. And again, a team like Tonga may take advantage of that if we're not solid in our set piece.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we just discipline, because I mean, I believe in the Samoa match, I think Jason Dam got a yellow card in the final minutes, and that kind of just sealed the deal, being a man down. And this past match against Portugal, guess what? No cards. And I have a feeling, you know, they're going to be, I think they're playing in France, so different pitch. Maybe the pitch conditions will be a little better. I do think the pitch conditions, you know, the grass was a little chewed up there. I think that's kind of what killed us. Although I still believe, and I'll say this, I could be watching South Africa versus New Zealand every day. Referees still don't know how to fucking call a scrum, but that's just, you know, that's just me. Maybe it's just a front row. I'm pissed off. Like it's like whatever happens, whatever side the official's on, the shenanigans are going to go on the other side. until they get the fifth official, like I've been talking about, to come in. So they literally the fifth official, he comes off the sideline. He just officiates the short side of the scrum, whatever the short side of the field is, and then he walks off the field.
No, he segues off the field.
He segues off the field. Because you want sponsorship and you don't want the unions to pay for it. He segues off the field. But my point being is that's usually what happens. And then it happens on the, and then they go to the other side and then the other guy. So just fucking come on. And I have to be honest, a lot, and this maybe this is because I just saw it happen a lot in the recent collegiate match that I was watching, but it seems as though a lot of times that this is just what I feel, and I could be completely out of pocket. When they're setting the scrum, they're penalizing the team for an early push, but the opposing team's not holding the weight, and that's part of their fucking job. That's part of the set of the scrum, is to hold the pressure. And I think there's sometimes teams are getting penalized for the quote-unquote early push just because the opposing team isn't set enough to hold the pressure. And I think that's something that World Rugby needs to take a look at when we talk about officiating.
I think they're supposed to consider, too, of who's in the advantage of the attack. And I've seen them penalize attacking scrums. I'm like, why in any world would their attacking prop do that? You know what I mean? They wouldn't. So you need to reward the attacking team. And I hate to say it, I think it's happening in the line out too. You know, that the gap is closing. Every time. And you know, so again, you big guys sort it out. Sort it out.
We used to do B-side matches, and the referee, I always talk about this guy, and I'm so mad I forget this official's name. But in B-side matches, when we would do a tunnel, he would make everybody put their fucking arm out.
Yeah.
And you touch your fingertips, and if you got any closer than that, he was going to blow the whistle because he was trying to teach you to stop closing the tunnel. And he would just do it in B-side matches. But guess what?
Gap integrity.
Guess what? Learning that moved over to A-side matches, and it was rarely called because we knew what the friggin' deal was.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's a bit of the trickery. That's a bit of the head games that I like to play when I was in the second row, is it say, hey, sir, can we get a middle? They're encroaching upon the line out, and ask them to look at it at almost every turn just to keep the opposition honest.
Well,
absolutely.
This is an opportunity to mention my 6'9" friend who I learned all my locker. Luke Gross, down in Indiana. You know, I'm sure he's listening. And, yeah, they're wrapping up their Big Ten season. So Luke taught me a lot of stuff, you know, in the lock position.
No, absolutely. And don't get me wrong. I don't want to lose the dark arts of a scrum or anything like that. But like I said, I truly feel, no offense to the officials, a lot of them weren't forwards. A lot of them didn't play and get their head dirty in that position. And that's fine. But there needs to be a little more where you bring in Joe Marler and have a fucking, you know, top-con convention.
I thought you were asking World Rugby to bring you on, and you get on the Segway, and you can ass around the pitch.
That's all you need is my fat ass falling off a Segway on an international test match. It'll be all over social media. Andy Els will be talking about it on his new show where he's fixing up houses and shit. Like, that's all I need. I have enough of myself being stupid with this show on social media and YouTube and Facebook that I don't need to have any more of those types of viral moments go viral for me.
If New York only had a professional rugby team.
Yeah, seriously, man. Well, listen, somebody, I'm not going to say who, Rick Collins, sent me that USA Rugby is looking for a chief communications officer, and he truly felt that I would be a good person to do that, which I was like, one, I'm not relocating to either Colorado or San Diego. And second of all, if it's the chief communications officer and USA Rugby, how much are they really going to pay for that? It should be work from home. Let's be quite honest. If you can't communicate work from home in this day and age as the chief communications officer, I think USA Rugby hasn't wrapped their head around the fact that they need to be a little more nationwide. But, you know, that's my rant on USAR today. But guys, great pod. We were all over the place, but that's the fun part, especially when we have Dave on, because there's so many topics we like to pick his brain about. You know, good luck going into New Zealand in December. Yeah. I expect some type of plushy little Kiwi or something you're going to bring back for me because I'm a child. If anything, bring back a couple wins for the big guy. Always love when you guys do well. Always well, rooting for you and the boys.
Too, Dave. Oh, he likes meat pies.
You have no idea.
Easy, you know, and I didn't get any comments. I'm supporting the brand today. You know, I'm wearing your gear. You know, I can't wear the Castor. I haven't gotten any more.
We were waiting till the end of the show for the shameless plug. We just kind of building crescendoing, Dave. You have to give us a moment. I know you're, you know, super eager to get rolling here and to get yourself out. And I promise your car will be in your driveway when you're done. So, but, you know, we're getting there.
Well, again, like I said, it's kind of a little bit of a downtime, so it's great to be a rugby fan. And I get to do it because, you know, guys like yourself and again, our friend Ryan Ginty. So, again, watching some rugby, I get to watch our Eagles again over the next couple of weeks here, hopefully grab some W's.
And by the way, are you going to be at the Hounds Academy Midwest Thunderbirds game this Saturday?
This Saturday.
That guy's dying in his house right now. He's fucking sleep, Rob. Jesus Christ.
He's got tough.
Trying to think. Maybe. As long as my wife's not watching the show.
Yeah.
as long as you. Well, never mind. We talked enough about your car.
What wife you don't know won't hurt her. That's what I know. But again, Dave, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll have you on. We'll probably be dark because we're dark in December, but in January when we start back up, we'd love to bring you back on and do more of just a recap of how that little tour went, bringing the kids down there. Really appreciate you coming on and talking rugby with us as always. And good luck in New Zealand, brother.
Always, man. Happy to do it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. And everybody else, episode 193, done and dusted. Check out some of these RPKs. Like Rob said, we're going to try and have every coach from the MLR on prior to the start of the season. We're working with their schedules, and they've been super, super great when we're reaching out to them, and we're just kind of working it all out in the holidays. So be patient with us because they're trying to work through their stuff and still give us some time. So we really appreciate that. I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrara. That's Rob.
For 200. It's just over the corner. What do we have for 200?
Absolutely nothing.
Drunken debauchery. We're finally gonna drink.
I hope Cullen's on another military tour because I'd love to be on 200.
Listen, we'll go to full Monty. I'll relive my Zulu against Massachusetts Maritime at the local elementary school on a Saturday. That was fun. Don't know how we didn't get arrested, but we did it. But
approaching 200. That's awesome, guys.
Yeah.
The show will be done in Bungee Smugglers.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you need to see. That'll be great. But hopefully we'll have some surprises and maybe we'll have some people on we haven't had in a while. But
we'll rebrand it the Fat Man and the Old Man.
There we go. Perfect. I think that's our new show, Rob. Anyway, fans, appreciate it. And we'll see you at the next.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets. And see why. It's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Terms and conditions apply.